It's time once again for another episode of the Franchise Business Radio Show. Broadcasting live from the Pro Business Channel studios in Atlanta. And now here's your host, Pam Curie.
Welcome to the Franchise Business Radio Show. This is Pamela Curry, and naturally this show is a platform for bringing together franchise professionals and resources to connect, educate, and collaborate to serve the franchise community and franchise consumers. We're really excited about today's show because, believe it or not, it's kind of lonely in the studio. Right, Rich?
Yeah, it's just me and you hanging out in the studio, but we have some excellent subject matter experts we'll be chatting with online. But first, if you're just tuning in for the first time to the Franchise Business Radio, you've just listened to the voice of Pam Curie, and you're the host, obviously, as mentioned, the founder of Franchise Intellect, over 20 years in franchising, traditional corporate America. You've acquired your business acumen from multiple perspectives of the franchise business model. We've known each other quite some time. You enjoy helping these folks considering the franchise ownership. You wear a couple of different hats there, which we'll talk about throughout the show.
Sure.
But so you're also a consult. You consult on franchise recruitment strategies and training programs.
Yep, that's correct. And I definitely want to focus on our guest today. But yes, in the simplest form, I own a franchise consulting practice, and I do help individuals that are considering franchise ownership. And that's also about helping franchisors with their recruitment of new franchisees. And in addition to that, I do take my consulting practice a step deeper and provide consulting to franchisors around their training programs for their franchisees.
And the term we've used before is a business matchmaker.
Yeah.
So Casanova here as the engineer and Pam is the matchmaker, but it, for business.
But, yeah, exactly. I love it.
But with a couple of drinks, who knows, whatever, yeah.
Get those creative juices flowing.
Yeah, and you travel quite a bit, so we're excited to have you here in Atlanta, here in the studio. And let's go ahead and introduce our first guest on today's episode. And so we have joining us on the phone is Jason Leverett, and you're the president and COO of At Work Group, a leading U.S. Staffing firm, well-versed on cutting-edge solutions and initiatives needed to combat the strategic issues facing the staffing industry. How long have you been in the staffing space, Jason?
Hey, Richard. Thanks for the intro. I've actually been in the staffing space at work has been around since 1986. But we didn't initially start franchising. We actually built upon a one branch location in Knoxville, Tennessee.
All right.
Started as an executive search firm. You know, effectively a headhunting shop. And the goal was to add temporary staffing to that headhunting shop as to kind of build up a little bit, you know, diversity in the revenue streams. Right. So that grew to about 11 offices, And in 1992, the decision was made, you know what, this brand is a great brand. We're going to go ahead and bring it to the market as a franchise opportunity. So there was a really very lucky individuals, very fortunate individual. Mm-hmm. The managers of those 11 branches effectively became the first franchise owners that we had. And each of those branch managers bought the office for a massive franchise fee of $1. And,
really? Man, why didn't you call me, Jason? You should have called me.
Wow. I know, that's what I'm saying. So looking at that, I mean, we've got many owners from that original dollar purchase that are still with us today. We've got lots of great owners in our system and really experienced just phenomenal growth over the last few years. And, you know, I don't want to share all the details now. I'm sure they'll come out in the course of the conversation, but it's been an exciting time here at work for the last few years. So.
Absolutely. Wow. A lot of deep history, obviously, in the industry, Jason. You know, when did you officially package yourself as a franchisor and start franchising? What year was that?
That was 1992. We started as a small company. You know, we really were a staffing firm. Mm-hmm. And in 92, you know, got the franchise agreements drafted by a local attorney here in Knoxville, Tennessee, in that area around here, and started building the system really organically. We were a staffing firm, as you mentioned, not a franchising group. So we had to learn kind of the hard way. We stubbed our toe a number of times and kind of, you know, learned how to franchise over the years and slowly grew and grew our system organically. And then events turned. We've continued to grow with some new, what people would look at as challenges, but I think opportunities in our space, which is exciting to be able to leverage that.
Absolutely. And, Gosh, you know, what I really want to dive into with you for a lot of our, you know, listeners out there is there is a hot topic that is going on right now with franchise labor laws and the joint employer conflict, which we all know as the NLBR, National Labor Relations Board. And want to really talk about At Work Group. But before we go into the details around At Work, can I kind of start on an industry level? And things are constantly changing, right? Could you help our listeners get a little bit of background of what's taking place with the NLRB?
So, yes, that's one of the big challenges facing, and it's kind of a hot topic in the franchising world today. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because, you know, outside looking in as a staffing organization that's in the franchising space, you know, the staffing industry has dealt with co-employment issues for, you know, really since the beginning of the industry. Because when you think about our space, we provide employees to our end host employers, our clients. And so there's always this potential issue with who's the real employer. Is it us as a staffing firm who steps in and says, you know what, those are our employees. We carry the insurances. We accrue and pay all the taxes. We're responsible in the event of injuries or accidents or whatever the case may be. You know, and we take, you know, basically whole responsibility for those employees. But the client, the end customer, is casting oversight over those employees and directing those employees on a day-to-day basis. So co-employment in our world, we've lived with it. We've dealt with it for years and years, and we've dealt with it successfully. Mm. And that's where it's been my position for quite some time, that the franchising industry should really take some cues from the staffing industry and how we mitigate those issues that surround co-employment through, you know, proper employee onboarding, you know, proper orientation processes and things of that sort. Because there's this inherent, obviously, with the McDonald's case and some other things that have been happening that help, you know, that kind of help take down the barriers from the standpoint of franchisees' employees are franchisees' employees, franchisors' employees are franchisors' employees. You know, where does that line blur and blend? You know, things like.
No, that, I mean, you know what? I never really put those parallels together. And it's sort of funny to me because when we were talking about just staffing and recruitment, my immediate parallel was with what I do, which is actually, you know, help franchisors with the recruiting of franchisees. And that is a whole different parallel I never really thought about, this whole co-employment and how you've had to manage to that in the staffing industry, right?
with one specific job, if you will, which is finding entrepreneurs to, you know, to match them up with good opportunities for them. So you're doing exactly what we do. Now, the difference is in our space, we have that line of business, but we actually put people to work and process their payroll on a daily basis on behalf, for our franchisees. We handle that processing and everything. But at the end of the day, you know, the question comes back is who's the responsible party, and everyone gets very excited about it. But it's going back to looking at the core contractual relationship, proper indemnification provisions. At some point, the courts are forcing us, the NLRB are forcing us to have to face this challenge and really structure our franchise agreements to be able to mitigate risk as much as possible. Cues on proper indemnification, on properly outlining who's responsible for what, and indemnifying yourself or themselves out of certain provisions or clauses that you don't want to be involved in. And at the end of the day, if we can't do that, if we're not able to properly structure through, you know, court cases and decisions that are handed down and it incurs cost, well, unfortunately, the costs for certain things may go up. And I hate to say that, but, you know, if that's what is being forced to happen, you know, we've got to be able to protect ourselves and protect the integrity of the franchise brand. Mm-hmm. So whatever your franchise brand might be.
Absolutely. No, that makes perfect sense. And that really has given me some insight, and I never really thought about it on that level. So thank you. And I know our listeners appreciate that.
Yeah.
Anything else you would like to add there before I want to kind of learn a little bit more about At Work Group?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. And obviously I'm here as a resource. If you or any of your listeners have any questions, feel free to pass them my way.
So. Excellent. Well, I kind of have a two-part question for you with That Work Group. Can you first kind of describe your franchise system? You kind of grew organically. And then I'm kind of curious, with that growth, how has technology played a role, especially with all the changes happening in the technology space?
Definitely. Well, so. On the growth end, we, as we mentioned, we grew organically. We took our time in growth because we're focused on growing a sustainable model. So it took us, you know, we took a very strategic look at how we're going to grow the system and who we're going to grow it with. you know, as we've grown, though, as we've gotten developed and implementing technology, which I'll share in just a little bit, but as we've grown, become more efficient, been able to handle more capacity as a franchisor and our support and our processing and all of the things that we do, because of that technology, we've been able to take that growth to the next level. Mm. It's exciting to report that, you know, when we look at our revenue growth, our unit count growth, I mean, we've just absolutely exploded. We had a record year in 2015 with new owners added to the system. We've grown our branch count in 1 year, over 30 units in 1 year, which is really phenomenal.
Wow.
For us.
Yeah, congratulations to you.
Yeah, we had 57% revenue growth year over year, going from $164 million in annualized sales to $257 million in annual sales in 1 year, where the industry as a whole was only really pushing about a 8 to 10% growth on a very aggressive look.
Very impressive.
So, you know, we've really blown a lot of those numbers out of the water, and it goes back to the fact that, and I really stand by the statement wholeheartedly, is that in a service-based industry, franchise owners just do it better than a company-owned type store or operation, because they care. They have a vested interest in the success of their business. And that's something that we've been able to reposition. And everybody sells on service. You know, our services are better than in a service industry. Our services are better. But who can stand and back that up with statistics? Agreed. And we've been able to do that year after year. Mm-hmm. You know, we consistently pull our organization through third parties. There's actually a best of type competition or award system that's been developed by a company called Innovero that looks at net promoter scores in the industry itself, and then benchmarks net promoter scores for participants in the best of staffing award or competition. And we've actually participated the last 3 years, and every year we're included in the best of staffing, which effectively benchmarks the level of satisfaction of our end customers and our end employees who work for us. And we're posting statistically numbers that are off the charts. And it's just a testament back to the fact that local ownership, franchise-owned service business, specifically in the staffing space, do it better. Our revenue grows faster. Our satisfaction of our employees or clients is higher. It's just, it's a full package.
Absolutely.
And so it's exciting to be able to bring that to the table, and really the results speak for themselves.
Well, and Jason, it's interesting you should say that, because I always like to really boil things down almost to simple terms. And when people ask me about franchising, I say, you know, really franchising is a growth strategy using the money and talent of others. And one of the greatest values of it is exactly what you have already mentioned, which is you have those independent owners that have an invested interest in making sure that it's successful and really takes that service to a whole nother level because of it. And
exactly. And you couple it with a winning model where, to answer the kind of the second part of your question, with technology, we've been focused the last 5 years of bringing our technology and resources really to the next level, to offer best-in-class resources to our franchisees, to give them the tools they need to be successful. And so with that, again, going back to the fact that using proper tools for sales and applicant tracking, using online tools, our franchise system, we implemented a franchise management platform throughout our franchise system to promote communication. We implemented a really awesome team communication tool called Slack, and I think that's been one of the most exciting implementations. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Slack.
Now tell me, is that an acronym, or does it mean you have a Slacker in the office?
No, it's actually a tool called Slack. So here's the thing with Slack. It's a team communication tool,
okay.
And I stumbled across it. It was originally used by NASA and Harvard and some other really Ivy League and just elite individuals. And my thought process was, and they advertise. I mean, if you go to their website, that's the tool. They said this is the communication tool that put the Mars rover on Mars from NASA. So if these folks with the level of, the combined IQ of these individuals, the level of smarts in these individuals feel that this tool has value, we can find value in it as well, too. So we did a beta test. We implemented it, and people absolutely love it. It's like our own private Twitter or chat piece that's ongoing among the entire system. It takes that element of a franchise feeling like you're on an island, all by yourself, and brings everybody together. You can share ideas. We've got old owners, new owners, everybody collaborating constantly, sharing photos of their branch. It just makes the whole team come together. So it's exciting to be able to leverage technology to better the system and bring our owners together and just increase that satisfaction level overall.
So let's talk a little bit about the franchisees themselves. I mean, and someone that might even be considering becoming a franchisee. what are you looking for in a franchise? Do they have to have a background in staffing, a background in HR?
Oh, no.
What do you look for? What are the characteristics?
So, I mean, primarily, we want somebody with with drive, the willingness to get their hands dirty. This is not an industry where you hang a sign and people just start knocking on your door or clients start asking for employees to put to work. It's going to take an active, engaged owner, someone who's driven, who wants to be in this space, who has an interest, who sees the opportunity presented, and is willing to actively get involved in the branch. Our prime candidate, our prime suspect, if you will, is an owner-operator type model, energetic, really relationship-driven, you know, very focused on service, really resilient because it is a competitive industry. And so you've got to be able to hang and be able to take some no's as you're building up from a business-to-business-based sales model. And you're recruiting in a really tight employment market right now. So we're looking for those kind of individuals who not only like to grow and build and handle themselves, growing from a financial aspect, but there's another kind of side to the coin in the staffing industry is that we help people get to work. We're helping people find fulfilling employment. At times, it's the primary breadwinner in a family that we're assisting, helping them put food on the table, if you will, in a very real sense. I mean, we're helping them with that that career change or choice, or so it's there's a very fulfilling aspect to what we do as well, in addition to the monetary aspect. So.
Makes sense, absolutely. And I signed on. I'm a new franchisee. Obviously, deep experience, an incredible technology platform, Slack, that is very instrumental in helping your franchisees be successful. What other kind of training do you provide for your franchisees?
Oh, well, and that's where we've seen really since, I took the helm as president and CEO of the company in 2011. And from that point, post-recession was really a tipping point for us where the value proposition in the industry changed, where the value that the staffing component, the end service that we provide became just crazily evident to our end customers, and our industry just started exploding with growth. And we started looking very hard at our training platform and our training concept and how when we're bringing people, into our fold, into the franchise system, looking at it to say, are we assuming too much? Are we assuming they know too much? So we looked at rebuilding our training platform piece by piece to really ensure that our owners are getting over and above. I'm a big fan of a very trained staff, very trained franchise owners, because the better those owners and their staff are trained and the opportunity for training is there, the more successful they're going to be in the market. Mm-hmm. So what we looked at was, we're starting at the very ground. The minute they sign the franchise agreement, how that training process begins. So what do they do? And so we, with that franchise management tool, we partnered with FranConnect. I know a lot of the listeners are probably familiar with that. Mm-hmm. But we utilize their opener process. We utilize some of their tools and modules there. But through the opener, we effectively highlighted checklist items. So we have online web-based prerequisite training. We have prerequisite readings that they have to read books and effectively take tests and pass class. We actually have a partnership with the National Association, the Trade Association, the staffing industry, who offers certification. And we have it's a requirement for all of our franchise owners to pass their standard certification process as well. But then we bring them in about 2 to 3 weeks after their initial franchise is signed. We bring in the owners to what we call our launch camp. And so it's a 2-day session of owner-only training. They don't bring staff. This is owner-only. And we focus on the real key mechanics of owning network franchise, the financial understanding, branch selection, location selection, internal staff hiring strategies, market analysis, a very thorough review of the market, opportunity in the market. So that 2 day is meant to owners to kind of get their minds wrapped around starting the process to build their franchise locally. After that point, we actually ask them to go out, require them to the franchise room to go out and actually shadow an existing at-work branch, anywhere from 3 to 5 days in an existing at-work branch somewhere in the country. We try to look at close proximity to where the prospective owner or the new owner is actually located. Then they actually see, they sit in that branch and they can see what an existing branch looks and feels like. This is, we don't want their branch to be the very first staffing, branch they ever step foot in.
Sure.
So we want to have that and encourage them that shadowing with checklists on both sides. The branch has a checklist of items they're supposed to show the owner. The owner has a checklist that they have to go through to make sure that they see all the different activities. Then we have job fairs, we have a pre-opening process, and then finally, leading up to the week before their actual grand opening or their opening of their branch, is our instructor-led initial franchise training, and that's a week long in our Knoxville, Tennessee corporate headquarters.
Well, that is definitely a full 360 training program.
Here's the exciting thing. It's all available initially, but all these items, we encourage our franchise owners for new staff. They can take advantage of every component of it, and it's absolutely free at any point in time. Mm. I'm a big proponent of training and opportunities to train.
Agreed.
So we do one instructor-led training at the end of each month, but 3 weeks of the month, each week we have a different focused webinar training that's open invite for everybody to join, sales, recruitment, systems, operations, and we do these webinar trainings consistently every single month, every single week, and every month. So,
wow, yeah, that old saying, you know, it's really nice to be in business for yourself, but not by yourself, right? You really keep everyone connected and not isolated.
And we never want our owners to feel that way. So.
Absolutely. Well, I'd like to let our listeners get in touch with you. What would be the best way to contact you?
Great. Email is the best way to contact me. And my email address, I'll give you the easy one. This is the bat line that most people don't have. It's Jason, J-A-S-O-N, at atwork.com. Also, hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm a big proponent of LinkedIn, and I'm very active on there. So feel free to send me a connection on LinkedIn, and we can message there as well.
Wonderful. And just repeat that for me again. Your email address is?
Sure. It's J-A-S-O-N, so Jason, atwork.com, atwork.com.
Great. And there was a double at there, so I didn't want to confuse people.
It is. That's why I spell it. Yeah.
One is spelled out, the other one's not.
Exactly. Well, Jason, it has been such a pleasure to get to know you virtually and learn a lot more about At Work Group. I hope that I have the opportunity to meet you in person. Thank you for dialing in. And I appreciate you participating in the Franchise Business Radio Show today. Have a wonderful day, and I'm sure we'll be connecting later.
Thanks, Pam. Thanks, Rich. Have a great day, guys.
Thank you, Jason.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. Okay. All right. So, Pam, take care. And so this guy, you can hear the passion in his voice. He not only has the history, but he's as many years he's been at it, the excitement comes across.
Absolutely.
So you're listening to the Franchise Business Radio Show with your host, Pam Curie. And we're going to talk a little bit more about what you have going on, but let people know what's the best way to reach you before we introduce our next guest.
Oh, absolutely. And if someone's looking to get in touch with me, the best way to do that probably would be email as well.
Okay.
And that it would be pam@franintellect.com. That's Pam at sign.
Yeah, there's no extra at.
No extra at here. F-R-A-N intellect. And that's spelled INTELLECT.com.
All right, Pam. So we have great guests lined up on the show as well. And mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and introduce our second guest here joining us today. That would be Nathan Robinette, is the president and CEO of The Casual Pint. We were talking about that this morning. We always look for samples when we have a guest in food and beverage industry. Yeah. So Nathan's a craft beer market, the Casual Pint, I should say, is a craft beer market franchise headquartered in Knoxville, Tennessee, just up the road from our Atlanta studios here. He founded the company in 2011 with his father, John Robinette, and combined his love of craft beer and their grocery industry. Oh, I didn't realize they have the grocery background. So we'll tell you about that. To create this is what I love, the coffee shop of beers concept, because I love hanging out at a coffee shop, right? If only they had beer available. So Nathan's helping take care of that. So Pam, he's all yours.
Excellent. Obviously, if we want to get a sample, we're going to have to go to Knoxville, Tennessee.
That's where a road trip I'd be up for.
Absolutely. Nathan, welcome to Franchise Business Radio, and really excited to learn more about the Casual Pint. But before we dive into the Casual Pint, I know that you are not only very active in your community, but you also are working diligently with local governments to change laws prohibiting craft beer. What? to be bottled in 64-ounce growlers. And I know you've already had some significant success around that. But could you just share with our listeners a little bit about the history of this and the evolution of what's taking place in the industry?
Sure. First of all, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. But the craft beer industry is growing, you know, leaps and bounds. So it's causing their growth is causing these local municipalities to take a look at their laws, and they haven't looked at them for some of them since Prohibition. So the laws are very outdated. And the localities are finally understanding they're missing some tax revenues and things like that. And also, you know, not being pro-business. So they're really being proactive now and taking a look at the laws as it pertains to growlers. There's also laws on the books that you have to sell food to be able to serve alcohol. There's different percentages usually in play. So there's just a whole litany of things that exist. Some localities you can't sell on premise and off premise, which means you can't come in and have a pint and then take a growler home with you or a six pack with you. So that's again a challenge as we as it pertains to our model specifically.
That makes perfect sense to me. And obviously, when did you officially founded Casual Pint in 2011, and when did you start franchising?
2013. We launched Franchise Sales the fall of 2013.
Excellent. So tell us a little history about the Casual Pint and what made you decide to franchise.
Well, when we went into our business knowing that we wanted to franchise, we of course had no vision of doing it this quickly. We opened our first store in November of 2011. We built our second store in downtown Knoxville the summer of 2012. And about that time, we started building our franchise system. It took us about a year or so to put it together.
Sure.
And I think the growth of the industry and the popularity of craft beer certainly helped our growth and speed it along. But we had no visions of doing it this quickly, but we have, and it's been great. So we're excited about the growth and looking forward to more.
Absolutely. And obviously, you've taken off pretty quickly, and I know there are a lot of variables that come into play there. I am kind of curious, does technology have a play at all in your business?
A little bit. It really is, it pertains to our point of sale system. And
okay.
And now that we are a franchise entity, being able to operate on the same platform and finding a system that will do that was a bit of a challenge, but we found a good partner to work with. And so the point of sale system would be the biggest. And then the other part would be our loyalty program that we have with our app and things like that.
Ooh.
So I think technology plays a role in any business, some more than others, but those are the two biggest things that we deal with as it pertains to our retail operation.
And just obviously we have several listeners out there, but I've kind of come at it from two different perspectives. Is a franchise opportunity, is this the kind of business I would like to get involved with and be an owner operator of? And then of course we also have our consumer who just enjoys craft beer. Can you kind of talk first about the consumer experience, and then let's go to the other side of being an owner operator of the business?
Sure. Well, as a consumer, you come in and you have a variety of options to choose from a pint selection. So we have, most of our stores have somewhere between 22 and 30 taps. And it varies based on the market that we're in, because when we go into different markets, we want to be able to support our local brewers. So if there's a good collection of brewers, like in Cincinnati, Ohio, for example, they've got 15 breweries just in the city limits of Cincinnati. So our stores up there have 36 taps. Which is obviously on the high end, but we want to, again, be able to support our local folks.
And of course, you picked the city that I'm from, by the way, Cincinnati, Ohio.
It's a good beer city. We're really excited to be up there.
Should I say go Bengals, or is that not permitted?
That's quite all right.
Okay.
Our stores are very clean. They're very, again, the coffee shop environment, they're very welcoming for males and females. So it's just a nice place to come with your friends or with your sweetheart. You come in and sit down and have a beer, and hopefully you'll find something you like and you take it home with you. We do growlers, of course. We mentioned that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You can mix a six pack in our stores. You can buy a six pack off the shelf. And some of our stores also do a crowler, which is a 32-ounce aluminum can that we seal and seal for a to-go option as well.
Very nice. So we have a growler and a crowler.
We also have a small food concept in our stores, just small bites, appetizer-type things, wings, brats, pretzels with beer cheese, things like that. Nothing that you would really make a meal out of, or as an owner, nothing that you would have to invest and put a full kitchen in, but certainly a nice little bite to eat while you're having a couple beers.
Absolutely.
And then Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and so I just sat down. I just really enjoyed a nice pint of craft beer, and from the casual pint, I said, you know what? I want to be the owner operator of one of these. What does that look like to be an owner operator of the casual pint?
Well, the good thing about our model and the way we have it set up, you can be an owner operator if you want to, and you can also be a semi-passive owner and do it as an investment. So we can train you as the owner operator to run your store. We can also train your manager if you're going to be a passive owner. So it works out really both ways.
Absolutely.
But the ownership, it's a fun business to be in. It really is. The craft beer industry is just a collection of really cool people. And then our customer base are good craft beer loving people. And so it really works out. It's really a fun business to be a part of. The ownership, kind of like a day in the life of an owner, is really split into two different distinct parts. The early part of the day is very much your administrative work, your ordering and your scheduling and your event planning and marketing activities and things like that. And then the latter part of the day, of course, customers are coming in. And you're getting to build those relationships with your customers and execute the events that are going on throughout the course of the week and different things like that. So I'm a people person. I always enjoy the latter part of the day. I want to get the book work done early and be done with it and get to socializing and mm-hmm. doing the events and hanging out with our customers. So that's how our day is structured, and certainly the latter part is more fun for sure.
I would second that as far as the way I roll as well. And you mentioned something which I think is really important for our listeners, that yes, you have the owner-operator model, but you also permit semi-absentee or passive mm-hmm. ownership as well. And not all franchisors do that, but you have decided to go down that path, which I think is a great opportunity for those that are maybe looking for diversification, right?
Yes.
Excellent. Talk to us a little bit about once a franchisee onboards, what does the training look like?
Yep, it's split into really four different parts. The first part we call our quick start training, and that's when we really begin site selection. We make sure that the formation of the business, the franchise owner business is good as far as their entity they're forming. And we're introducing them to all of our key vendors, being insurance agents and POS suppliers and all of those fun things. So it's very much building the foundation for their success in the beginning, but very heavily focused on site selection. And we have a team of national real estate brokers that help us. So we take care of the site selection in conjunction with the franchise owner. It's very much a collaborative process.
Sure.
But we take care of that expense and that burden, because site selection can be very challenging. And if you've ever done it before, very, very confusing.
Yes.
So we have the experts to help us through that. So that's really the first part of the training and how that begins. And then we do classroom training. So our owners will come to Knoxville for a week of training, and we teach them all things casual pint from the front door to the back door. We also talk about some of the not so fun stuff as far as government rules, regulations, policy, procedure, and things like that. But they get a full scope of the entire business. And then probably about the time their store is beginning construction, they'll come back to Knoxville and begin their in-store training. And we have at least 11 days of in-store training. We begin here in Knoxville, but if you're going to be an owner in Cincinnati, Ohio, we already have two stores up there. So you could train at one of those two stores or both of those stores. So we try to get our owners, our new owners, around to some of our existing owners, mm-hmm. Let them see how they're operating and how their clientele works and the different flows of the business, and just kind of give them the whole perspective. But there are those 11 days of in-store training. And it's the same thing for whether you're an owner operator or a manager. That manager will get the same hands-on training. And then we transition to grand opening week. So we're there the entire week of grand opening. We're installing the POS system, taking care of any final training issues that may arise, doing staff education. It's a crazy week of grand opening, but it's a fun week.
Oh yeah, the excitement.
We get there early on Monday morning, and we're opening the doors on Friday evening and having a great time. So we're there to help and train and support during that week as well.
Yeah, very hands-on.
Yeah. And then, so that's our pre-opening, training schedule. Once the store is open, we come back for a 2-week visit, and then we're making sure the store is operating and marketing and doing the things that they need to. And then we're doing monthly update calls with that owner, and we're doing quarterly on-site visits with that owner through their first year of operation. So during the first year, we're very involved and very supportive to all of our owners.
You know, and just on that note, I mean, because he really gave a really good perspective around the value of being a franchisee versus just a total independent owner, because there are big differences there. You really provide a lot of handholding and great training. But what advice would you give to an aspiring entrepreneur that's looking to buy a franchise?
My first tidbit would be to find something that you enjoy. Mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer, if you're not having fun doing it and you don't like it, that's not worth doing. Mm-hmm. So certainly find something that you're interested in and that you like and that's a passion for you. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, do your due diligence. Talk to other owners in the system just kind of check them out. And see, kind of look under the hood and see what you think. But really and truly, you got to find something that you're passionate about and that you enjoy.
Great advice. And speaking about making contacts, if someone wanted to get in touch with you about becoming a franchisee, how would they go about doing that?
The best way to do it is our website, thecasualpinefranchise.com. And there's an information sheet on there. Just fill that out and we'll be in touch. But that's the simplest way to do it.
Thecasualpinefranchise.com. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yes, well, we really appreciate you being on the show, Nathan. Rich and I look forward to getting to Knoxville and getting that sampling.
Yeah, come see us. We'd be happy to have you.
Or we're talking to the dude right now. When can we have one here in Buckhead or in Atlanta? When's that happening?
Well, yep. As soon as they change their laws, getting back to the beginning of the conversation, we need the laws changed.
But I thought Georgia was a pro-business state. But
well,
when it comes
the,
to
the north part of Georgia is not, the southern part of the state is. Our concepts would work down towards Macon and further south, but in Cobb County there, we're no good. So we gotta get some laws changed.
Understand.
Well, so we have the option to either move to South Georgia or to Knoxville, but I'm looking at your website and the, some of the, interior shots of the, that coffee house environment but with beer. And, I think we move our studio to Knoxville. I don't know, to Cincinnati. I think Pam might be a little more partial to Cincinnati. But yeah.
That's good.
All right. Great minds think alike.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Nathan. Appreciate you being on the show. And again, if you want to get in touch with The Casual Pint, just go to thecasualpint.com and you'll be able to get all the contact information and get a really nice snapshot of what the business concept is all about. Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So, Pam, so far, so good.
Yeah, we've got the Knoxville entourage
I'm
here.
I'm telling you, right? So we're going to introduce our next guest in just a moment. So just remind our listeners, you're listening to Franchise Business Radio with your host, Pam Curie. So, Pam, you ready for our next introduction of our next guest?
I sure am. And I mean, this has been really a great show. And right? We're doing something a little bit different, right? With these, with all these virtual guests and the virtual world we live in today.
Yeah. We've been traveling from Cincinnati to Knoxville to Atlanta and now in Texas.
That's right. So tell us a little bit about Bill, who's in Texas, but the franchisor is actually headquartered in my hometown, Cincinnati.
Absolutely. Shout out to the Cincinnatians. Is that what you call yourselves?
That works.
All right. So Bill McPherson is the executive director of franchise development of at First Light Home Care, and has been awarded the quite a few awards. So let's start with number one. So Entrepreneur Top 500 Franchises, Top Franchisee Satisfaction, Franchise Business Review, the Top Veterans Franchise, Franchise Business Review, and Forbes Top Franchises. So he's locked them all down. I don't think there's any left over for anybody else.
I think you're right. That's a big congratulations there, because those are huge accomplishments and awards to have achieved, Bill. And we definitely want to welcome you to the Franchise Business Radio Show, and really looking forward to learning more about First Light Home Care. Just out of curiosity, in a previous conversation we were having, you said that you work quite a bit with veterans. I'm just kind of curious to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate you having me on. And yeah, it's interesting because our franchise concept, providing non-medical home care for those in need, most of the industry focuses just on seniors, but First Sight's a little bit different in that we care for anybody over 18. Mm. And when we care for adults with disabilities or new moms getting out of the hospital or adults who have surgeries, we also do quite a bit of veterans who return from overseas in service. So both on the services side, we do quite a bit of work for veterans in need, but also it's been interesting in our 5 years of franchising, we've awarded, I think at last count, 16 franchises to veteran owners.
Oh, wow.
And those veteran owners do exceptionally well as a group. For many probably obvious reasons, but wanting to serve and give back and follow a system that works and so forth. So they become very, very good operators as well.
You know what, and actually just in franchising in general, we often say that, you know, vets they've got the work ethic. They know how to follow a system, and I can see them being some of your top franchisees.
Yeah.
So could you kind of talk to us a little bit about, give us the history of First Light Home Care? You said that you just started franchising 5 years ago, but give us some more history there.
Sure. So the company was started in 2010 by Jeff Beavis and his son, and as you indicated, out of Cincinnati. And after about 7 months of building kind of the infrastructure and the support, they then started franchising. So we've been franchising just over about 5 years, and during that time we've awarded over 183 markets in the United States. So pretty strong growth in the first few years of franchising. As I mentioned, we are a non-medical in-home care concept. So the industry is basically split between what they call skilled care and non-skilled. Skilled care being nursing, LPNs, infusions, injections, medication, Medicare. We don't deal with that. It's a whole different business, much higher investment, risk, liability, insurance. So we do what's called the non-medical or non-skilled.
Thank you for explaining that, because you hear a lot about, obviously, the many different senior care concepts, but obviously First Light Home Care is much broader than that with your non-medical care. And I also want to talk about how it's impacting corporate America in general. I mean, how is the home care industry helping corporate America reduce loss of productivity?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So I've been in this about 27 years in franchise leadership, and I've been in the home care space for many of the last several years. And up until about 4 or 5 years ago, the number one reason in corporate America for lost productivity was child care. So if Pam's son or daughter was ill, then she needed to take time off of work, and that was lost productivity from corporate America. And as of about 3 years ago, that has now been eclipsed, child care, with the number one reason that people miss work is caring for loved ones, and specifically their parents or grandparents. So we see this major shift in corporate America where people, as we age and the baby boomers and people wanting to stay in their own homes, adult children like us are taking time off of work to care for loved ones. And it's a huge economic loss to corporate America. And so now what we've been able to do is focus on employee assistance programs and working companies that work with benefit packages and HR departments directly to encourage them to provide a certain number of hours per month or per year, if you will, for First Light Care into their benefit packages. And the reasoning is, if we can keep their employees at work longer and then supplement their care for a loved one with First Light, then they have less lost productivity.
And this is called the Dependent Care Assistance Program, the DCAP, correct?
Yeah. So our franchisees are really just starting to, I mean, there's just a huge opportunity still in the United States, but we're just starting to be able to gain some traction with some of the larger companies. And even the mid-sized companies are realizing that, again, you know, that this is a huge need for their employees and for their workers, and how can we supplement that maybe through their benefits package or referrals to First Light to keep their employees at work longer and still provide exceptional care to their loved ones.
Wow. You know, I really like to, I'm just happy to hear that we're thinking, having some forward thinking around that, because that is a reality that is in front of us. As far as First Light Home Care goes, tell us some interesting things that's happened with First Light recently.
I think one of the biggest, I would say somewhat of a surprise, but or affirmations is that, you know, this is a extremely competitive industry. According to the International Franchise Association, home care, senior care is the number one growth industry in the U.S. for the next several years because of the aging population. And you can't have the number one growth industry without having unprecedented competition. So it's very, very competitive. And yet, as a newer franchise and one that came into a very crowded space, we've been able to rise very quickly to a leader in the industry. And I think what's been interesting is how we've been able to differentiate. So in this very crowded space, how does First Light stand out? And it's really quality and service and accountability. Because what most of the other concepts do, unfortunately, is basically staffing companies, moving bodies in and out of homes, caregivers, if you will, with no real attention to quality, service, and accountability. And we're just the opposite. That's our whole focus, is service and quality and accountability, and how do we measure that, and how do we make sure that the family is taken care of, or the client, or et cetera. And so when we do that, I mean, what we do is pretty straightforward. It's not rocket science, but when you execute at that level with that focus, then you start to differentiate. And that's been a real pleasant surprise or affirmation.
And that makes perfect sense. And I know that that's what I would want if I were going to be looking for this type of service, quality service and accountability, because it's a very personal and important decision. And that kind of leads me to think about the types of franchisees that you are bringing on board. What characteristics do you look for in a franchisee?
Well, it's been interesting over my career. I've been pretty much in every type of franchising except the fast food industry, and I've been in retail and B2B and B2C, and this is a very different model, if you will, in that this is a people business on every front. So every component of success for our franchisees revolves around people. Mm-hmm. This is not a business where you get a great retail location in Cincinnati and people come in for coffee on the way to work. So it's very critical that we bring in franchisees that want to be involved in their community. Mm-hmm. This is a highly repeat and referral business, relationship business, and whether it's their staff or their caregivers that go into the homes or the clients that they serve or the referral sources in the community that give us business, this is a people business from A to Z. Mm-hmm. And so we have to have people that enjoy that, that want to give back, that want to be part of a community. It's a local-based business. So those are some of the attributes we look for. And then whether that franchisee is more focused on the operations side of the business or the sales and marketing, we determine through the due diligence process. But they have to be people, if you will, and they have to enjoy working with people.
Yeah, people business. So what would be a typical day for a franchisee?
Well, you know, when you're dealing with different families and loved ones and different scenarios and different types of need, as well as anybody over 18, as I mentioned, you know, every day is pretty much different. But the two constants in our model is what we call operations and recruiting, and then networking and sales and marketing. So there's two functions that go on simultaneously and that need to go on simultaneously to be successful. So one is out in the community building the First Light brand with hospitals and assisted livings and attorneys and so forth, those referral sources that give us business. And then the other role is all important on the caregivers. Mm. How do you find the right caregivers that are going to go into the home and execute with that quality of care, and how do you keep them employed? How do you retain them? So those are the two things, the operations and recruiting, and then the networking and out in the community.
And something, of course, near and dear to my heart, of course, is training. And when you bring on those new franchisees, what does the training look like?
Yeah, it's pretty extensive, and it's award-winning already in the industry. We do 50 to 55 hours of the franchisee from their home. So, if Tam was the franchisee, she's doing about 55 hours of training, webinars, conference calls, online curriculums. Then that's followed up with a mentor program, and then coming to Cincinnati for the 6 days of actual new owner training. And then after that, there's on-site visits and continued support throughout. And I think one of the things that is appealing to me and why I came over here as a senior manager from another home care concept was that the mentality here at the senior management level is that if the franchisees aren't successful, we're not. And that's not just a slogan, but when you look at our franchise agreement and how we make money as a franchisor, it is one way. The only way we make money is if the franchisee grows revenue. And when you set up a model like that, it becomes very clear as a senior management team that we need to do whatever we can, whatever possible, to make sure that that franchisee reaches or exceeds their goals and aspirations.
So the quality, service, and accountability runs by both ways, absolutely.
All the way to the top, yeah.
I have to share with you, here in the studio, we're actually looking at the First Light Home Care website, and we really like your logo. Is there a story behind it?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. So I've been here about 3.5 years as executive director, and that question is the number one question as people finish their due diligence and come into Cincinnati to meet everybody is, tell me about the logo, the brand, you know, how to get started, where, you know, we live it every day, and so it becomes commonplace, but it's interesting. And when Jeff and his son started the company in a very crowded space, it was very blurred. The home care industry was a lot of reds and blues and hearts and homes, and it was very blurred. And we specifically wanted to stand out from that. We wanted it to be a new beginning, a wonderful experience staying at home, not end of life and not downtrodden. And we wanted it specifically, you notice we didn't put senior care in the name. And that was because we didn't want to be locked into seniors because we care for anybody over the age of 18. So it's amazing how many times franchisees and their staff, when they first come across the brand, that they cite that and say, you know, what prompted you to look at First Light? And so many times it was the refreshing, the brand, the leaf, the color, the palettes, all of that.
I'm glad I asked that question.
It's amazing how many times we get asked that.
That's wonderful. So how can our listeners go about getting a hold of you?
Well, so obviously through our website. So we've got firstlighthomecare.com, and then we also have our franchise site, which is firstlightfranchise.com, and then there's toll-free numbers on both. So if they're interested either in the business opportunity or if they're searching for care for a loved one, they can find us there.
Wonderful. Well, I am. I have to let you know that we're very excited to have you on the show. We hope we have the opportunity to meet you in person. And again, just for our listeners, if you would please give us that website again, both of those.
Yep, so it's firstlighthomecare.com and then firstlightfranchise.com. So two different websites. The first one is for actually somebody looking for services for a loved one, and then the other one is for the business opportunity.
Bill, thank you. Thank you for not only sharing with us about First Light Home Care, but also just giving us a little bit of insight of what's taking place in the industry, as well as how this is impacting and helping corporate America reduce loss of productivity.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. You have a great day, and thanks again for being on the show.
All right, bye-bye.
All right. Another subject matter expert. And I was just listening to y'all's conversation. I had this takeaway. I don't know if they want to borrow this on their website, but because it is interesting. As soon as you think home health care, you think seniors.
Sure.
So I would say one of their USP's, unique selling propositions of First Light Home Care, would be care has no age limits.
Ah, yes.
Right?
Because isn't that true?
Caring for people regardless of age.
Yes.
Yeah.
Caring of people regardless of age.
Yeah. But the idea of caring for someone shouldn't be based on their date of birth or their age.
Agreed. Yeah. And you know, something else that really stuck out to me when speaking with Bill is that it is a people business from A to Z.
Yeah. Mm. So you have to have any one of those letters in your name and you're on board. Yeah.
What a great show. What a great group of guests. Back
Big
to
time.
Back, all calling in.
Yeah.
Changed the dynamics of what it's like to be in the studio. And
Did you just become Franchise International Business Radio?
Yeah. I think I just did.
Or at least from coast to coast. Yeah. So as we normally do in each episode, for those people that have been listening in to these conversations and hearing your your expertise obviously comes across in these conversations. Not something I couldn't have these in-depth conversations like you have because of your years of expertise. So let's talk about that as we close out this episode. So talk to us about your plates that you spin or your hats that you wear and how you help people.
Yeah, well, actually, thanks for even bringing that up, Rich. I do want to share with you. You're right. I feel like I'm been around for a long time when it comes to the franchise.
I was trying to say that very nicely, but yeah.
Right. Try not to date me. And really, I've seen the franchise business model from all different perspectives. Yeah. As an employee, as a franchise consultant, obviously, been involved with boutique franchise consulting firm where we helped independent business owners take their concept and franchise it. And I am also a regional developer, so I'm a franchisee myself. So I really have seen the franchise business model from a lot of different perspectives, and I can really appreciate where each one of these franchisors are in the development of their system, right? Because there are definitely phases as you're growing your franchise system. And what I'm able to do as a franchise consultant, really where my focus lies with my practice is a joint effort. And what I mean by that is I am very involved with the recruitment of franchisees, and there's two sides of that. One side, of course, is working with individuals to help identify what franchise model would work well for them. Just like our guest earlier today said, it's really good if you have a passion for the business that you want.
Yeah, do what you love, and then it doesn't seem like work so much.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, you have to do something as a career, as a profession.
Absolutely. Right? And I'm fortunate that I have over 500 franchise concepts that I represent. So it allows me to really hone in on what is best for that individual and help them identify what would be the ideal business for them based upon what they are looking for.
Because these days, I think a lot of people are drawn to the idea of entrepreneurship and having a little bit more control over their destiny and what they do. And the franchise model is very appealing because it's turnkey and a lot of the work's been, it's a proven concept, right? But to navigate those waters of, it's overwhelming.
Absolutely.
Of which one should I pick? It's just like a dart on the wall, but this is where you come in and you're
I help them put that rudder in and kind of navigate those waters. And then the other side of that equation is the franchisor, right? So it's got to work for both parties. And, you know, as you start to get to know, the different franchisors, their business concept, their philosophy as a franchisor, then you're able to help them recruit the right franchisees. So it really is a matchmaking effort. Right. And there's two sides to that equation.
And you talked about their the environment, but it goes into a little bit more in depth with the culture, right? Because there could be a great widget, but if you're just not kind of feeling it, you know, within the so you do get to kind of test the waters a little bit and kind of visit some of these franchises and figure out, is this something I want to spend my day doing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as far as the prospective franchisee or the individual who's considering business ownership, there are a lot of steps in the discovery process. That's what we call it. In corporate America, they call it the interviewing process.
Yeah, yeah.
In the franchise world, we call it the discovery process.
Okay.
And being able to be effective in the due diligence when you're going through that discovery process is where I'm able to help out individuals.
Yeah, it's really, like you said, on both sides of the table, because you asked one of our earlier guests about the idea of who's an ideal candidate for them.
Correct.
And that's where you are, that middle person, so you kind of vet on both sides.
Correct.
And if you're talking to Susan or Bob and they love this idea, you might say, well, based on your personality and the conversation we have, my gut feeling is this is probably not the best scenario for you.
Mm-hmm. I've had people ask me, well, who is it that you work for?
Right.
Do you work for the individual or do you work for the franchisor? And technically both, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because there are plenty of franchises out there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and the real question becomes is what is the best possible business for that individual? And is that the best prospective franchisee for the franchisor?
And the franchisor, I mean, that's great. The vetting process is going to be done, and you're delivering them, in theory, a well-prepared candidate that's kind of gone through a lot of the initial steps that, you know, that they might have to take the time to vet them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So last question. We've never really talked about this on the show, but I was just thinking as I was listening to your conversation. So with all your experience and you spend so much of your efforts on this, when you travel or go to franchises, right, as a customer experience, you must have a whole different perspective. You know, it's like a police detective. You can't really turn that off, whatever, right?
Yeah.
So are you constantly analyzing? I know we hang out sometimes and have some coffee at some local franchise locations. Are you can you turn off?
That's a great question. Right. That's a really great question. Because you're right. No, you walk in, and especially if I'm in a different city or town, or if it's a brand that I don't know, I immediately think to myself, is this a franchise?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, would it make a good franchise? And, you know, is there, so.
Or one that you know and you could travel in, and it's not the same. It's not being delivered, right? The same. Mm-hmm. Why do you want to step in and make a comment, or do you sometimes do that? Or
typically,
you hold back?
Typically, I would hold back, but I have to admit, on the training side, I'm like,
oh, they missed the boat.
Every once in a while.
Well, you might alert the some of the owners or whatever. Yeah,
right.
So you would be a great candidate for really undercover boss at all these locations, right? I just thought about that.
And there you go.
I need to submit you to that show, whatever. Yeah, you could be.
Well, I like that idea. Do you have some connections there, Rich?
Well, I'm thinking we could do undercover franchisee show, whatever. Yeah,
I'll be the mystery.
Sort
of the mystery shopper.
We'll talk about that maybe in an episode. Is that something that, that is that a franchise opportunity? The mystery franchise, mystery shopper.
Actually, yeah. You know what? Absolutely. I mean, as long as there are a lot of different kinds of concepts that can be franchised. Again, franchising is. Again, merely, I just think of it as being a growth strategy, using the talent as well as the finances of others. And because of that, you have an invested owner of that business.
All right. So one more time, how would folks reach out to you? And we'll wrap up this episode of the Franchise Business Radio Show.
Yes. It's Pamela Curry. And the name of my consulting practice is Franchise Intellect, basically knowledge around franchising. And if someone wanted to reach me, they can go to my website, which is www.franintellect.com. That's FRANINTELLECT.com. Or simply give me a call, 847-970-8765. Again.
She turns on that radio.
Yes, 847-970-8765.
Thank you again for joining Pam Curie and her guests on the Pro Business Channel. Use the social media links here to share today's show and stay tuned for the next episode of the Franchise Business Radio Show.